Hello, everyone. As you can hear, and since you are immediately turning down the volume, I'm not Brandon. A bit of a different start to the show this week. Brandon was just so distraught with how the team has been playing, he can't bring himself to doing a show this week. No, actually, this whole delayed show thing is entirely my fault, as I botched a few scheduling things and wasn't able to record when we said we were going to. Thus, a delay in getting a podcast out. This one's on me. However, we wanted to get something done, and so tonight, I record a solo show. Let's see how it goes.
This is Caps PA announcer Wes Johnson, and you're listening to Board the Pod!
All right, well, the last week in Caps hockey has been something. Remember the cup run? It's kind of the opposite of that. It's pretty much where we're at right now. This team, at one point, was making a real attempt at running away with the league, and everywhere, the fans, the players, everyone seemed to have a great feeling around this team. And then now it just kind of seems like they're running in sand, trying to keep up, just keep away from the teams in their own division. I was watching the game, against the Flyers, and at one point I think they said that the difference in points was something like 15, and now the Flyers are actually tied for first with the Caps with 87 points. That's how good the Flyers have been recently and just how bad the Capitals have been recently. This team, they look lost. Now, maybe it's just me, but I feel like the effort that the players have been showing, it just isn't enough. You know, I feel like the other teams, they're pushing harder during games. They're doing more to try and win the puck. They're playing smarter. They're doing what the hockey pundits like to call the right things. And at one point, this team was on top of the league in points. They're now 11 points back of Boston, who's in first, going for the ever-so-important President's Trophy. Now, I don't think this is going to happen, but there is a real-world scenario where the Caps don't make the playoffs. Currently, like I said, they're first in the Metropolitan Division. They got 40 wins, 20 losses, seven losses in overtime. There it is. With 87 points, tied with the Flyers, they're 3 points up on Pittsburgh, who's played one less game, who also have been struggling as of late. In their last 10, they're 4-6, not like the Caps, 3-5-2. Not great. The Blue Jackets are... Oh, no, wrong division. The Islanders... No, that was right division. I'm stupid. Anyways, the Blue Jackets are first in the wild card with 79 points. Islanders are a point back of them, 78. Rangers, 76. I know it sounds like a lot. You know, you've got 8, 9, 11 points. Carolina at 75 points, 12 back. Those things can change very quickly if those teams go on a nice little run and the Caps don't. Then you have a problem on your hands. You have a team that is now fighting for their very opportunity, and they're currently stuck in... I was never very good at this when I was riding my bike, but they're kind of... Caps are stuck in that second gear. Everyone else is pushing harder in a higher gear. That's how bikes work, right? I don't know. Brandon has a bike now. He can tell me. So right now, this team is definitely struggling. They're definitely having a hard time, and it doesn't seem like anything that they could do is going to make them get better. There's a lot of talk about how they struggled in February back when they won the cup. That's true. That did happen. No one's going to be able to deny that. However, I also kind of felt like there was something that you could see. And maybe we saw a little bit in the game, the win over the Penguins, but there was something you could see that you watched the game and you watched the team play and you went, okay, these guys have something. There's something to hang on to, something that's going to push them to be better. They've had opportunities. They went up against a Rangers team who's 6-4 at the moment in their last 10. But they're a team they should be able to beat. And then let Mika Zibanejad just destroy them and get 5 goals. They went up against a Flyers team that's playing incredibly well right now and just looked embarrassed by them. It's a problem, and it's one that's been going on for a long time, and it's a little surprising that we haven't seen anything happen in the front office and in the coaching, but we'll get to that a little bit later tonight. So, what do we have to talk about on this show? We got Tom Wilson. We got penalties. Oh, so many penalties. The coaching staff, the defense, the offseason, because it's me and I like my summer planning. And Holpe. Let's start real quick with everyone's favorite instigator, Tom Wilson. I get that he's a physical guy. He's a power forward type. That's kind of his game. And he's brought an offensive side to his game now. And as Brandon likes to call him, he's top line Tom. But was there any particular reason that Wilson was trying to kill every single Flyer in sight instead of playing smart hockey? I mean, I get it. He likes to live in the head of other teams' fans and players. Completely understand that. Okay, he's got prime real estate in the mind of Jim Rutherford up in Pittsburgh, as well as their fans. And probably a bunch of their players. I get it. Flyers probably the same way. There's probably a number of teams. St. Louis Blues definitely don't like the guy. Completely understand that aspect of it. But there was one point in the game the other night that really irritated me with what Wilson was doing, aside from a bunch of other dumb things he was doing. There was one point in the game where the puck was in the Flyers' end. It was in the corner. If you're watching on TV, I don't remember what period it was, to be honest with you, but the puck was in the bottom right part of the TV screen, if that helps. Okay? Puck was in the corner. Wilson was the closest player to the puck. And instead, he makes a left turn and goes to hit one of the Flyers. Now, I'm pretty sure it wasn't a delayed offside, but even if it was, you get your butt back over the line and you keep playing. You don't just go and try and make the hit to make the hit. It wasn't part of it. It wasn't necessary. This just goes back to the playing smart hockey. The team is playing like almost like a bunch of individuals. Obviously, they're playing together and they're actually having some good opportunities to score. And some of it might be unlucky. They've hit a couple posts. That's happened. But good teams take advantage of the opportunities when they come up, and this is not a good team right now. They're not playing like a good team right now. They're getting beat by teams that they should be competitive against, and they're not being competitive. They're struggling against teams that they should be able to blow out. I mean, they struggled to beat the Minnesota Wild. That was a game that they should have been able to get over with pretty quickly and almost coast towards the end of that one. So I do feel like Wilson's play against the Flyers was a very nice way of symbolizing to an extent how this team has been playing. Not very smart. And I don't understand why Wilson's trying to kill everybody. I thought we were past that point, but I guess not. But it also brings up an interesting point in terms of the penalties. Why have there been so many? There's certain penalties that always have really annoyed me. If you look at one like slashing, I get sometimes you're going to lift a stick or knock the stick out of the way, or you're going to hit the stick and hit the guy's wrist or hands, whatever. Understand that. Penalties happen. It's a part of the game. Things happen that you weren't intending to have happen, but they do. But when you have 11 penalties in the last two games, that's a problem. When you have 18 penalties in the past four games, that's an even bigger problem. That's a sign. Okay, that's evidence that you're not doing something smart. That's evidence that you have a problem, and that's evidence that you're undisciplined. And to me, that comes back on the coaching staff. I understand they're not on the ice. They're not wearing skates. They're not wearing pads. They're not playing the game. They're not playing the puck. But what they are is they're preparing the guys that are wearing the pads, that are playing the puck. And it's tough to say as to whether they're doing their job right now. When you take consistent penalties, you keep your top players off the ice. Or I should say your top offensive players, likely off the ice. Some teams do have their top offensive player on the PK. In fact, Ovechkin used to play on the PK, I believe, early in his career. And at one point, they realized, we should probably stop doing that. This guy's pretty good. I think we want to keep him healthy. But when you are taking so many penalties, I mean, what was it? There was one point against the Flyers. Didn't they take like, against the Rangers. I'll go back and look at that game real quick as I'm talking. But I believe they took three in a row. Is there a way to actually find the penalties on the... Oh, there is. That's nice to have. Let's see. First period, two penalties. 7:32. Nick Dowd tripped Capo Caco. That guy's got a fun name. And then at the 10:49 mark, Dowd again. I guess he missed the box. Got one. Oh, only one penalty in the second period. Well done, boys. And then they had three in a row at the 12:52, 14:55, and 16:53 mark. Eller, Carlson, and Eller again. When you're having these consistent penalties in a row in a game that you're chasing to some extent. That means you're keeping Ovechkin off the ice. You're keeping Oshie from having opportunities because he does play on the PK. You're keeping him from having opportunities to put the puck in the back of the other team's net. And you're keeping your top, Backstrom's probably not getting out there quite as often. You're not, you're seeing more ice time for guys that play on the PK that may not be able to score quite as often as they normally, as the other guys might be able to do. And so this undisciplined play then goes back and you have your top offensive players. Not only are they not playing, but now they're getting cold. They're sitting on the bench. They're not really doing much. And it creates more and more problems for this team as they go. Now, I understand that these guys are adults and professionals and all, as I talked about a moment ago. And they should be able to do this on their own. But that's not the case. That's not how sports works. If that was the case, then we wouldn't have coaches. You'd only have them at the junior level and when you're working with kids. But we do have coaches because it's their responsibility to prepare these guys properly before a game on a number of different levels. From probably some of the analytics to certain plays to certain plans to the power play is win the puck and then pass it to Ovechkin. That's essentially seems to be the game plan when it comes to the power play. Get it to him in his office, let him take a shot, see if he can score. The fact is it gets a bit repetitive. On the power play, which, if I recall the stat correctly, since December 1st, they have been so incredibly poor. Well, let's go more into that in a second. But the coaching staff, Blaine Forsythe, the assistant coach who is responsible for the team's power play, which is 17th in the league, and their centers, who are 27th in faceoff percentage as a team. That's a problem. Okay? If you want to point fingers, and you, me, whomever, wants to point fingers at someone who's not getting the job done, I'd look at him. It's not personal. But when you have a once-in-a-generational talent in Ovechkin, likely Hall of Fame talent in Backstrom, and world-class stars that can play on your offense, like Oshie, like Kuznetsov, you have Kovalchuk, you have Carlson, you have Orlov. When you have these guys that can score, and your power play is 17th, when it's one of the worst power plays since December 1st, that's a problem. And the fact that the team hasn't done anything about it is on the coaching staff and it's on the front office because this is not anything new. You have the statistics that you need. You know that they're struggling. You have the stats right in front of you. I found them. I went on to NHL.com. It was really easy to find the stats and find the issues. So the fact that they haven't done anything about it, you see, I feel like NHL coaches have the shortest, not lifespan. That's a bit more intense than I'm intending to say here. Job security is what I'm looking for. They have the shortest amount of job security, it seems to be, in all of the major professional sports, except for maybe in the championship in England. I feel like that one, they're there for like a week or two, or maybe just Palermo in the Serie A. But I'm honestly a bit surprised at Forsythe. I spelled it right when I was writing my notes. Can't say it though. I'm honestly still a bit surprised that he has a job with this team. And I know that sounds messed up because he's a human being and he needs an income to live and all those kinds of things. And clearly, he has a hockey mind. But something is very broken with this team right now in terms of their power play. When you have that many talented guys, and I swear to God, and I saw someone else do this. It might have been Minnesota. There's another, the slingshot. I don't get it. I need someone to explain to me the benefit of the slingshot because I've seen so many times that a Caps player is bringing up the ice on the power play and he's got room. He's got an opportunity to dump it in chase or make a pass to try and be able to control it into the zone, which I feel like with these offensive guys, they should have more opportunities to do that. And somehow they still decide to pass it back to the guy who then comes basically into the same spot the first guy was in, which I feel like as a defense, you make that pass back, you're like, oh, I got to go cover. He's going to go a different direction. He's got more room to make a move. But then he comes right at you or where the other guy was, and you're like, all right, well, I mean, this works out for me. Now I don't really have to cover everybody. I'll cover him still. So I don't get it. Can someone please explain to me the benefit of the slingshot? Because I just don't get it, and I don't understand why they haven't made a move with the coaching staff to be able to improve how things are going right now. Speaking of the coaching staff, we'll talk about Todd Reardon for a second. It's on him to get this team to wake up. He's the head coach. You know, it's his job now to make sure these guys are playing better. And the question is, can he do it? I have to imagine he's been trying in practice, in the locker room, wherever, right? He has to be the one that is pushing these guys to play better. The question is, can he do it? Can he get them motivated? And based on the, you know, samples that we've seen, based on the games we've seen, the evidence shows no. Because their play has been consistent. Consistently bad, but it's consistent. And that's evidence that what he's doing isn't working. Now he's come out and he's called out the players to the media, which I hate when a coach does that. The fan in me goes, oh, that's great. You know, it's good to, you know, we know that you're not happy about this. So I can be like, yeah, get him, Todd. But I feel like as a player in that room, as someone who has a podcast that can talk about it, I feel like that's a desperation move on his part. I feel like that's a last resort because he doesn't know what else to do. And so all he can do is call them out and challenge them in front of the media because he probably has already challenged them in the locker room and it didn't work. They still came out and played poorly, and not just poorly, but undisciplined, bad hockey. And when that happens, I think he just shows his desperation. But now we're so close to the playoffs. It's what, just under a month away. Again, considering, you know, assuming they get in, which it's likely to happen. But now they're running out of time if they were wanting to make a move. And if you do make a move, you want to do that when you have an opportunity for a new coach to come in and work with the players so they can play his system. I don't know. I'm looking at the schedule right now. They don't have an opportunity for someone to be able to come in and really work with these guys to play the system that he would want. You know, they kind of had, they didn't really, maybe they had that opportunity in February. You get a couple days off. They have a couple times where they have 2 days off. But at this point, I feel like it's almost too late to go and make a move and try and fix things. I mean, they've got 14, like 15 games left. I probably could have just looked at how many games they've played and then done simple math. But instead I counted because that's fun. They've got limited time left to be able to go out and turn this thing around. And really, you want to hit the playoffs playing well. I actually can't remember in 2018 if they were playing really well when they got into the playoffs. They certainly didn't start the playoffs very well. But I feel like they were playing much better. They were playing good hockey as opposed to just kind of struggling like they were doing in February. And we've seen this carry over into March in terms of the poor play. And you have to see, are they going to, I mean, they got plenty of opportunities to go up against some teams that are not as good. Now they got Pittsburgh on Saturday. It's an away game in Pittsburgh, a 1 o'clock start. That's a weird time. You've got Buffalo on Monday night in Buffalo. The Sabres currently well out of the wild card at this point. They're 12 points back. They're likely not making the playoffs this year. So that's an opportunity. You got Detroit already eliminated from the playoffs. You've got Chicago. You know, you've got some opportunities. You got Chicago is likely not making the playoffs. So you have some opportunities to go and start to build something here. And I feel like if the front office is going to make a move, they would have already done it by now. And based on the limited time left in the season, I think that McClellan's just going to roll with what he's got and hope that he can turn things around. And I just don't see how that was a good idea. Unless Reardon suddenly turns into Barry Trotz or everything just suddenly clicks, I think this is another season of a first-round exit. And I think if that happens, they go out in the first round or even the second round, I think they have to make some big changes in the offseason. You know, I think the coaching staff are all would have to get replaced. You know, and you lose your opportunity to be the team that can go out and pick from a pretty good crop of coaches that are available. I know everyone likes to think about Boudreau. It's not going to happen. He was already here. We saw how that would have worked. They're not going to bring him back in. I don't anticipate them going after Mike Babcock. I don't really want Mike Babcock. I want Gerard Gallant. If they were to get someone, I would like to see Gallant. I think that would be an interesting fit. I think he did some good things in Florida. I think he did some good things in Vegas. I think he probably would have turned things around there if they'd given him some more time. But they, you know, they pulled the whatever the freaking I don't know. It's late. I can't think of the phrase at the moment. But they made a move that felt like best fit for them, and they're bringing in DeBoer, and it seems to be working out pretty well for them as they're top of the Pacific right now with a 2-point lead on Edmonton. I think at this point, these are the guys they're going into the playoffs with. Not just obviously the players because the trade deadline's passed, but this is the coaching staff they're going into the playoffs with. I don't know. If you were to replace Blaine Forsythe, who do you replace him with? You know, you could give some of his responsibilities to other guys. Maybe you go down to the AHL and bring up a coach. That's an option. Hershey might be a little upset about it. But at this point, this is the coaching staff you have. This is the coaching staff that they're going with. And it just does not seem to be the thing that's working. And it's disappointing because Reardon was really the guy they thought was the future. And I know he's only been there for, what is it, 2 seasons now. He hasn't even finished his second season. But I don't think it's looking good for him going forward. I don't see how, if you have another first-round exit, you can go, you know, I think he's still our guy. I think you need to go out, and I think you need to find a coach and some assistant coaches. And this time you don't wait until the last minute to bring in your assistant coaches. But you find someone that can get these guys going and playing smart hockey again, who can keep them disciplined and playing well. And right now, it just doesn't look like Rudin's the guy. Especially if they, you know, go out in the first or even the second round. You know, second round, yeah, get them further than last year. But it's not enough. Not with the players that they have on this team. And I think that this is going to be a really interesting offseason just with the coaching staff. And I could see if they go out, especially in the first round, I could see some major changes. Maybe not on the offensive side of things, though I could see potentially one or two guys making a move out of town. I don't anticipate that, but I think the defense is going to get a nice hard look in the offseason. Because right now, this defense is pretty poor. Kempney, I don't know what happened to Michael Kempney. And maybe the injury is kind of the thing that happened with Carl Alsner, where Alsner was, I mean, he was a top defenseman. And then he had that injury and just could not, he was not the same player since. After the injury happened, Alsner was just a completely different player. Well, not completely different, that's not fair to say. But he was nowhere near as good as he should be, or should have been. And it was sad to see it drop off, and I'm kind of wondering, is Kempney in that same position? Or is it just a mental thing? Is it a coaching thing? Is he not being prepared in the same way that he was his first, you know, when they first brought him in from Chicago? Another guy I thought interesting on defense was Nick Jensen, who I have said I'm not a very big fan of as a hockey player. I don't know him as a person. I'm sure he's a nice guy. But Jensen, I found interesting that he's actually getting more ice time and more game time. Even though there was a bunch of rumors about him being moved at the deadline. And maybe they were just rumors. Maybe it was nothing to it. But I find it interesting that he's getting more ice time and more game time when he was one that was apparently on the trading block. I do like Dylan. I think he was a good acquisition. And I think it makes sense to try and make a move to bring him in the offseason. He's going to be an unrestricted free agent after wrapping up. He had a cap hit of 3.27, so he's likely to get a nice paycheck. I just closed the website for some reason. He is likely going to get a nice paycheck in the offseason, and I think this team is definitely going to have some hard decisions to make considering the other number of unrestricted free agents they have. Maybe Kovalchuk comes back. I haven't been overly impressed with him so far. They have to re-sign Travis Boyd if they want to, and Leipzig if they want to. Gudas is likely gone. Not too worried about that. Yeah, I'd like to see Dylan back. You need to re-sign Singenthaler. He's a restricted free agent. And then there's, oh, right, Braden Holtby, who they need to look into as well. We'll talk about him in just a minute before we wrap up the show. So they have some definitely interesting decisions to make in the offseason. I think Carlson's obviously not going anywhere. Kempney, I don't think he'll go anywhere, but we'll see. Jensen, I wouldn't be surprised if they moved him out. I think Gudas is gone. I'd like to see Dylan and Singenthaler back, so that's 2, 3, 4 guys. And then there's Dmitry Orlov. I think they like Orlov. But I would not be at all surprised. And what I would do is I would entertain phone calls from other teams regarding Dmitry Orlov. That cap hit of 5.1, I feel like you can bring in someone else or bring up one of the young guys who aren't obviously going to be as good, but they can get to a point where Orlov is at now. And maybe you hang on to him. He's only, you know, he's 28, but I feel like the defense is getting a bit older. And this, I believe, is one of the older teams in the league. I don't know how to look up that statistic right now because I don't see that as an option on the NHL's website. It's definitely not there. Is it on cap friendly? Nope. On cap friendly, it does tell you players' ages, but it doesn't tell you like the team's age. So I don't know. But I'm pretty sure they're one of the older teams on average. But their defense right now is this, and this is based on their cap it in terms of the order I'm going through, but it's also almost their ages. That's weird. Anyways, Carlson, 30 years of age. Orlov, 28. Gudas, 29. He's probably gone. Kempney, 29. Jensen, 29. Dylan, 29. It's weird. Sangenthaler, 22. I think they like Fevari. I think they want to give him a bigger look next offseason and preseason, and then likely next season. And I wouldn't be surprised if they decide to move a couple guys out, free up some cap space to bring a couple of guys back. And then, oh, right, you have to re-sign Alex Ovechkin after next season because he's scheduled to be an unrestricted free agent after the 2020-2021. That was hard to say. Season. Carlson making $8 million, need to find a way to free up some cap space. And do you do that by moving out Dmitry Orlov? I at least entertain the offers. But at this point, based on this defense, I'm taking phone calls on pretty much everybody over 25 that's not named John Carlson. Not letting anyone have Sangenthaler. I like him. He's only 22. He's definitely got, you know, room to grow. You got Lucas Johansson, who he seems to sound like he wants to go somewhere else, so he gets an opportunity to play. You've got Alexiev, only 20 years old. You got Favari. Connor Hobbs is always a possibility. They seem to like bringing up Tyler Lewington, but at 25, he's getting a bit up there. And they moved out Christian Jus. And they did what they need to do. You know, you have these young guys to be able to move them out and replace them as they get older, or replace them with someone that you feel like can play a bit better. And they moved out Jus, who'd fallen down the order or pecking order in terms of guys they want to play and bring up, and brought in a young guy that in Daniel Sprong that may or may not play well for Hershey. I actually haven't checked, to be honest with you. So we'll see how that one goes. But I wouldn't be surprised at all to see them make a couple moves on the defense if the season does not go well and they're not raising another cup. One last thing I wanted to discuss before I wrap up whatever this has been is that the NHL came out with, and none of this is official, but the NHL came out, or NHL, there's a rumor that came out regarding the NHL that the salary cap ceiling for next season might go up pretty dramatically. There's an opportunity. Of course, we said the same thing last year, and then we saw that didn't happen, and that made things very interesting for this past offseason. So the cap hit right now, if I'm reading this correctly, is 81.5. There's a possibility that it might actually go up. It probably won't, but it could go as high as $88 million. That gives you so much extra money to play with in the offseason when you need to sign a bunch of guys, and you likely need to make a couple moves to figure out some other things that you can do to fit other guys in. One big player, as I mentioned a moment ago, that they need to decide what they're going to do on is Braden Holtby. Earlier this season, it certainly looked like Samsonov was the guy and Holtby was gone, be it by trade or you just let him walk in the offseason. Now, Samsonov's looked okay, but he hasn't won a game in quite a while, and not a lot of that is his fault. I'd say maybe like 3.5%, maybe 4% is his fault. The defense definitely owes him a dinner or something because they've been hanging him out to dry a bit. Holtby, on the other hand, has been playing out of his mind. Whatever was causing him to play poorly earlier in the season, in the middle of the season, it doesn't appear to be an issue anymore because dude's playing on fire. Holtby has been what the Caps need, and he's keeping them in games that they occasionally don't have any business being a part of. Now, he's 30 years old. He'll be 31 in September. And he's coming off a contract that was paying him $6.1 million. So the amount of money he's going to get is going to go up. It has to. So the question is, how much money are they willing to put in, knowing that one of a couple different scenarios is going to happen? Seattle has the expansion draft coming up. Caps can only protect one goalie. Which one are they going to protect? Do they make a deal like the Penguins did, where they trade Fleury? Or no, they trade another player to, I don't remember who. They trade player picks or something. I mean, it was a first round pick. So when they traded to Vegas, so that Vegas guaranteed they would take Fleury. Do they do that with Holtby? Or, and this is kind of a risky move, and Ryan's going to get mad at me for this. If Holtby is still their guy, he's only 31. We've seen plenty of goalies that can play further into their career. Do they go and look at moving Samsonov? He's only 22. He's got plenty of years left, and he definitely looks like the real deal. He is the real deal. He's not quite the real, there yet in terms of being the real deal, but he is a high top-level prospect that will likely be able to backstop a team for a very long time. However, the Capitals already have one of the best goaltenders in the league in Braden Holtby. So the question is this. If they're looking to retool this offseason, or even next offseason, because they're going to lose somebody to Seattle, and I still think it's bogus that Vegas isn't going to lose anybody. But you know they have to do something. And if you need to retool, and some of the ways to do that, which could potentially save you money, because trading sometimes is more cost-effective in terms of cap hits than signing someone in the offseason. Because they already have a contract. And it's not like the NFL. It's not like soccer or European football. You can't just rip up your contract and sign a new one. Do you go and move obviously you can move Holtby, or do you move Samsonov and get a top level, either high end prospect or a top six, winger or forward? That's kind of the same thing. To play on this team. And do you bump Oshie back a line? Or Wilson back a line? Put one of those guys on the third line, especially if you don't re-sign Kovalchuk. I don't know if Richard Ponick's going to work out in that spot. That's a whole problem. That'll be another problem for the offseason. But do you go and bring in someone? Because Oshie, he's young in terms of, the world and just people in general. But in hockey terms, Ovechkin, Backstrom, Oshie, not young guys anymore in the world of sports. So you need to kind of have an eye, you have a plan in the back of your mind, if you're the Capitals, if you're in their front office, that you need to replace, and you're going to have to replace Ovechkin at some point. He's going to retire. The Russian machine may not break, but he will be done playing at some point. You'll need to replace Backstrom. Ideally, you have Kuznetsov. And then if I have his position down correctly, and my other computer crashed, so now I can't look it up, but you have McMichael, who is just tearing it up, or has been tearing it up this season. I fully expect him to get a nice look in the summer. Do you go and you look at, you have Vrana as a young forward, but after Vrana, there's not a lot of young, after McMichael, there's not a lot of young forward prospects that you look at and go, that's our guy. Like, we know he's going to be an NHL player like Vrana was. And there were even questions about him at one point. They don't have anybody else. They've been drafting a lot of defensive guys. And they've got plenty of those guys. But I don't see a lot of forward prospects. And do you make a move like moving out Holtby? Or do you move Samsonov, hold on to Holtby for 3 or 4 more years if you have the cap space? This is all depending on the cap space. If they don't have the cap space, this is a moot point. But if you have the cap space, do you hang on to Holtby, move Samsonov, and get a likely high-end player? I mean, we're talking a top six, potentially future top-line winger or center for him, from a team that's looking, they need a goaltender. They want a young goaltender. It's a good possibility. Incredibly good goalies are hard to find. and someone that is as high end a prospect as Samsonov is, I think there might be a team out there that's like, you know what? We have a nice plethora of young players. We're rebuilding. We need a young goalie. Let's make it happen. I think the more likely thing is that Holpe's the one that leaves. I'd hate to see it. I think he's always going to have, he'll be a hero in the DC area. I think his number will be up in the rafters one day. But at the moment, it's going to be a tough call. So we'll have to wait and see what happens with those two guys in the offseason. But that will be potentially fun for us to watch, but will be quite the headache and stressful decision-making for Brian McClellan. Now, normally this would be the part we would go down on the farm and then around the NHL, but it is almost midnight, and I'm tired. So we will catch up with the Hershey Bears, the South Carolina Stingrays, and the entirety that is the NHL next week when Brandon and I are back together recording. So real quick, let's go through a preview of the cap schedule before we talk again, which will be at some point in the next week, hopefully. We got the Penguins in Pittsburgh on Saturday. That is a 1 o'clock game. It's on the NHL Network as well as local broadcasting, NBC Sports Washington. They have Sunday off, maybe a practice. I have no idea. Probably not at home because they go to Buffalo on Monday to take on the Sabres. It's a 7 o'clock game. It's going to be on ESPN Plus. What? Okay, sure. It's also going to be on local broadcast, NBC Sports Washington. They got Tuesday and Wednesday off before they take on the Flyers at home. That better be a win. That is also going to be on the local broadcast, NBC Sports Washington. And then just in case something happens and we are unable to record, they take on the Chicago Blackhawks on the 14th. That's next Saturday, so a week from when you're likely listening to this. That will be also on ESPN. Why is ESPN Plus? That's on NBC Sports Washington and NBC Sports Chicago. And then they take on the high-flying Edmonton Oilers. That's in D.C. at Capital One. It's on ESPN. Oh, why are the games on ESPN? I'm so confused. It's on, that game actually is going to be on NBC Sports Washington Plus. It's very exciting. That's a game actually kind of fun to go to see Connor McDavid, as that dude is incredible at hockey. So, if you have enjoyed the show and my rambling this evening, first of all, thank you for listening to this program. Hopefully, you're still listening at this point after I rambled for the last however long this has been. If you've enjoyed this show, go ahead and check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/whatthepuckpod. It's where we post when new shows come out, as well as all other sorts of things related to the Washington Capitals and the world of hockey. If you've enjoyed my rambling and want to see more of that in print form, so to speak, in text form, on Twitter, you can find me on there at WTP Coach Dan, talking about the Capitals when I have the opportunity, as well as Arsenal Football Club, the Bills, the Skins now that Bruce Allen is gone, the Nats, the Orioles, and whatever else comes to my mind. So that's on Twitter at WTP Coach Dan. You can find Brandon at Brando Cash. You can find the show. I don't actually know what the show's Twitter handle is, to be honest with you. I'm too tired. It's almost midnight. Time for me to go to bed. So again, thank you for listening to the show. And if I could ask for one small favor from everyone listening, if you could just take a moment to go to Apple Podcasts, formerly known as iTunes, or wherever it is that you listen to this program, give us a quick rating. And if you have a moment and you don't mind, if you could give us a review, it gets the show, the more ratings and reviews we get, is my understanding, is it gets us actually higher up the charts, so more people have the opportunity to check us out. So that's it. That's the show this week. That's all I have to say. I've been talking too much. I have no voice left. That's it. I'm out. We'll talk to you next week.
This has been a production of Brando Cash Entertainment. Music by DJ Wolfman. Voiceover by Sarah Jacks. For more information, go to brandocash.com.